Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things movie and nostalgia podcasts, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
What's the story, Wishbone? What's this you're dreaming of? Such big imagination on such a little bug. What's the story, Wishbone? Do you think it's worth a look? It kind of seems familiar, like a story from a book.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, a podcast where we revisit favorite pieces of pop culture from our childhood to see if they're still as good all grown up. I'm Kara Gail O'Regan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Poland-Clark.
Hi!
And our guest today is Brian Rodriguez, co-host of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast about the career of Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is also here on the Cage Club Podcast Network.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I mean, it's very weird not to be with my co-host, Kyle Reinfried. And yes, he's making me mention his name in the first 2 minutes. Part of our deal here, but that's okay. But I'm happy to be a part of Wistful Thinking. I am a fan. I've been listening. It's probably my favorite of the new run Cage Club podcast.
Oh,
podcast.
Thank you.
You know, so I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Today we're going to be talking about a few episodes from the classic PBS kids series Wishbone, which ran from 1995 to 1998 on PBS affiliates nationwide, and aired in syndication through 2008. The show's title character is a Jack Russell Terrier, so he's actually a dog, who lives with his owner Joe Talbot in the fictional town of Oakdale, Texas. He daydreams about being the lead character of stories from classic literature, and it is cute as hell. Brian, why was Wishbone the first thing that you picked?
I mean, so people like to do these podcasts and like to go back to stuff, and there's always this familiar stuff, but Wishbone's one of these things that I felt like hasn't necessarily held up nostalgia-wise. Held up's the wrong word. More, I never hear anyone talking about it, but when I thought back to, like, I'll put it this way. Half the books I read, I probably just watched Wishbone.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, same. Like, I'll feel like I've read a book, and then I'm like, wait a minute. There's no way I read this book. What the... Oh, Wishbone. And I think this happened because, as, like, a younger kid, I was really into reading Rainbow. That's, like, one of my favorite shows of all time. And I kind of... I don't know. The Reading Rainbow books are, like, younger kids' books. Like, I think cooler stuff happened on Reading Rainbow. But... like, Wishbone tackles some really, like, heavy books. Like, by adult, I don't mean, you know, porn adults, but, like, adult books, you know? Like...
Adult themes.
Themes, yes. And not necessarily, like, crazy stuff, but, like, books that I still probably wouldn't read right now because they're way too long.
Yeah, well, I was watching this, like, today as an adult. I was, like, having, like... flashbacks of like, oh, that seems like it would be hard to read.
It's so true, and it just, I really wanted to revisit it. I saw that like a lot of the episodes are on YouTube. I think maybe all of them are on YouTube. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I just picked a random bunch, pretty random, and I had fun watching it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How old were you when you were watching this the first time?
I kind of have no idea. So I'm 30 now. I guess, when did it originally air?
1995 to 1998.
Yeah, 95 to 98, like you said. Maybe I watched it first run. I feel like that was kind of even old, though. I don't know. But,
that's why. Okay, so I never saw this show, and I assumed that it was because I was too old, but that's not true, because I'm only 31.
Yeah, I don't know. I have, like, two younger siblings, so maybe they were watching it, and I was just, like, again, watching it with them. I don't really recall, like, running to my TV and watching Wishbone. I just know I saw these shows, and I know that's, like, how I got this, like, book knowledge.
Well, my understanding of most of classic literature also comes from Wishbone, and I'm the same age, and I definitely watched it when it was on. So, I mean, because that would be that age of, like, 8, 9, 10, years old, which keeps kind of coming up on this show as like a really compelling age for, like I was talking about in the last episode with Pete and Pete, with little Pete, he's kind of at that age where you start to realize that everything is a lie. And I think that that happens usually like around 9 or 10 years old. So it's in this same window that we kind of keep coming back to, which I find really interesting.
But this, so wait, let's talk about that for a second, because like I assumed that I was too old for this show, because watching it today, it's like so wholesome, and I was like, I would not have watched that when I was 10.
Oh my god, this show is so hokey, and it's so like just pure, like, yeah. I mean, you guys talk about a lot of these things, right, where it's like kid stuff, but there's definitely built-in adult jokes. Wishbone does not have that.
That's not true. It had two of them.
Really?
But they weren't jokes, though. Like, and so I've only seen the three episodes that we watched today, but I picked up two references to adult movies that kids wouldn't have understood. And they weren't jokes. They weren't, like, funny. But in the one episode, he said, "Here's looking at you, tree," which is a quote from Casablanca, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True. I guess I take that for granted.
And then in the Bark to the Future one, like, the music was the Back to the Future theme music, which, you know, a little kid probably wouldn't understand.
I guess that makes sense. I just, I didn't, like, see it on first watch. You're a better watcher than me, clearly.
I think I was just bored. I was, like, looking for stuff.
But it's not, there's not, I don't know. There's an aspect of that that I kind of really like, though, and I think that's what maybe drew me to it even then, just the opposite of like necessarily like trying to be too smart. So I don't know if you guys like researched like the guy who started this, but there wasn't a lot online about him, so I had to do like a really deep dive.
Oh, enlighten us, because you're right, there wasn't, the Wikipedia article about the show was rather light.
Yeah, no, there's not much at all, but like I watched some videos of the guy from like the, I think it was a Texas Film Anthology website or some website that just like document stuff that I'm sure no one watches these videos, but he's, what's his name? I don't even remember his name. Jim Ruddy, I believe. Jim Ruddy is his name, and he just seems like this dude who wanted to educate kids and have like no agenda about it. And it's like that kind of old PBS system, right, where local guy would get some funding, usually government funding, start a show, it gets picked up, and then the other syndicates pick it up and take it from there. And I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's actually still exactly how PBS works.
Great. I mean, like,
the vast majority of their programming actually comes from local affiliates, and then they get picked up and distributed nationwide.
Yeah, and that's awesome. That, like, this guy is just, this seems like this regular guy, because he didn't do anything before that. He didn't do anything after that. He just did this show. And he just wanted to, like, have kids. He says it, like, a million times in these things. He's like, oh, I just wanted to have kids have their first taste of real good literature with a dog. And it's like, good job, guy.
Can we talk about how it was with a dog?
Of course.
Sometimes I had trouble with that.
It's my favorite part of the show.
Mine too. I'm a dog lover. So I work with dogs as my regular job. Unfortunately, I do not get paid for the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast. So I guess that's the big thing that draws me in. So why do you hate dogs?
I don't hate dogs. I am a cat person. I do not hate dogs. But it took me a little while to get used to watching a dog. People treat a dog as if you were a human, especially in Homer, Sweet Homer, because the women treated him as if he was a sexual human. And it was still just a dog. So that took a little bit of getting used to for me. I didn't think it was as strange in the other episodes, but they were like calling him my love and my sweet. And I was like, okay, that's a dog. And his son, that dog's son was really hot in the
I was thinking that was the weirdest aspect to me, like that was his son, and like, I don't know, it was just funny, but whatever. I mean, he's daydreaming. So the creator of this, again, his name Jim Ruddy, he said he was really inspired by Walter Mitty, and just like the daydreaming nature of it. And again, we're supposed to, in the language of the show, we're supposed to understand that Wishbone is just a very well-read pup who tends to daydream his books. And, you know, only selected chapters of the books, but that's not here nor there.
Do you think that, like, he does the reading for Joe? Because Joe, his owner, doesn't seem like a very, you know, dedicated student. And I'm wondering, like, was he forcing his dog to do all of his homework? Because I would. I mean, if I had a dog that could read, like, that dog would be.
Well, but let's clarify. The humans in this show, Joe and his mom and his friends, don't know that Wishbone's talking.
No, only the ones in the daydream book thing. When Wishbone plays a character, other people can hear him. But when Wishbone's just Wishbone, only we can hear him. And it's just his thoughts.
Except for that one time when he wrote a note in that other episode. Yeah, the note about the fractions.
Well, he wrote a note? Wait, how did I miss that?
I don't remember that either.
You know what? I wasn't paying great attention.
I'm pretty sure that didn't happen.
No, it did. It did. He held up a note in his mouth that had a note about fractions. And that's how Joe learned to do the math.
He wrote the note, though?
I don't know where the note came from. I don't remember.
Well,
but it was suspicious how helpful the dog was.
Well, he's clearly more intelligent than a regular dog in the real life scenes.
They do treat him kind of like a person. Like when he became the mascot for the for the basketball team, the mom was like, "Well, I dropped Wishbone off. You can take him home. See you later." And then she just left the dog like running around in the gym.
I watched an extra episode, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow episode, because it's September, so it's Halloween now. and Joe is kind of mad at Wishbone because Wishbone didn't come to basketball practice, and he was like, it was the first practice, and like, today of all days, it's my super unlucky day because it's Halloween, and like, you should have been there.
So I'm pretty sure that's a second season episode, or is that a first season episode?
I don't know. I think it might have been a special, actually, because it was an hour long and the other ones were...
Well, it's kind of easy to tell because I purposely picked that last episode, the Shakespeare one, because I just wanted to pick a season two one to see. And Joe, like, considerably grows.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It was second season then, because he's, like, a high schooler.
It seems like second season, like, sucks more than first season. It seems like they treat Wishbone, like you said, more like he's a human, and it's less like, oh, what is my dog thinking? That's so cute. He reads books. In the second season, he's like a well-known person of the town.
Yeah.
Or dog of the town. You know what I mean?
Dog about town.
Yeah, no, and the show was successful. It won a Peabody Award. It won some Emmys.
Yeah, tons of awards.
But I think, I don't know why it didn't continue. That's what I couldn't find. It could have been a funding thing, but I think also maybe the kids were just like probably getting too old. You weren't going to have Wishbone go to college, as awesome as that would have been to see.
Wishbone the college years.
I would have enjoyed that, but that might have just taken a different tone.
They could have just treated him like a full-fledged human by then. If in the first season he was a dog and in the second season he was a dog about town, by the time he's in college, he's just a person.
Joe's roommate in college.
Yeah, I think that would actually, I would watch that. But I think, it would become a different show because the kind of stuff that you, maybe not. I was going to say the kind of stuff that you read in college is different than the kind of stuff that you read in high school. But I actually had several times where books that I read in high school were assigned when I was in college. So I don't know.
Yeah, and these definitely don't seem like middle school books. Like in the
No, they're more high school stuff.
So...
But I would have loved to see an episode about, like, The Stranger by Camus, or, like, No Exit, you know, some of the existentialist stuff would have been really interesting.
Yeah, treated in, like, 30 minutes, or even less, because half of it's, like, the real story. I mean, I applaud how they could give you a little taste of these books in such a little amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, from hearing, like, the guy who started it talk, Jim Ruddy, that was his intention. He wasn't like, these aren't the cliff notes to a book. Like, I couldn't, like, you know, write a summary on a book because of Wishbone. But, you know, you get the idea of a book, and then hopefully a kid picks it up and reads it. Because, like, oh, I remember this.
Mm.
Another,
that didn't work on me. I was like, oh, I don't have to read it.
Well, no, it didn't work on me either. That's what I was going to say. Like, I just felt like I had read the book after that.
Yeah.
Like, there's an Ivanhoe episode that I did rewatch because I was like, what episode was this? And then I rewatched it. And I swore I read Ivanhoe, but I definitely did not read Ivanhoe because everything I know about Ivanhoe was from that episode.
Mm.
Another thing I was going to say that I found interesting in the behind-the-scenes stuff is that, like, none of these people who are in this show are doing anything close to successful in television now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the voice of Wishbone, Larry Talbot, is currently a cast member at the Dallas Medieval Times.
I read that too, and it made me sad. I do not like to read that.
It was sad. That is sad, because think about it. Like, most people watch the show and love Wishbone, and his voice is cool. It's, like, good for the dog, and he has, like, three voice acting credits, nothing I've ever heard of. And, like I just said, he works at Medieval Times now.
Yeah, I must have paused this, like, 10 times. Like, someone new would come on the screen, and I'd be like, oh, that must be someone. And I would look it up on IMDb, and I was like, nope. They're fun, like, wormholes to go down, though, because you end up looking at a bunch of weird movies that they made in 1995.
David, the one friend, is a labor and delivery scheduler at a hospital in Los Angeles currently.
Interesting.
I'm sure people are wanted to know what happened to him. But my favorite behind the scene person in this show, and I actually knew this beforehand, is Mo Rocca, who eventually did Daily Show.
Yeah. I didn't know that, and then I saw his name in the credits.
What did he do?
He wrote a couple episodes. He produced the first season, and he was like one of the producers in the first season. It was one of his first jobs, like out of college. Huh. Out of, like, big TV, I put that in quotes, but big TV jobs. So I watched an interview with him, and he kind of explained, well, he had a funny quote, because while he was writer and producer for Wishbone, his other first job was, like, an editor for, Perfect 10 magazine, a pornography magazine that what did he say? Oh. Their prominent feature was that they only feature women with natural breasts. I was like, wow. And then he's like, yeah. And he had a funny quote. He's like, kids TV by day, porn by night. That's how I made it.
Man, what an origin story.
Yeah, it's great.
Is he from Texas?
I don't think so.
The whole thing was produced in Texas. Yeah. I was curious.
I'm just inferring this, but I think he might be somebody who CBS assigned to the show. I mean, PBS assigned to the show once it was, like, picked up. Because he doesn't seem to have any Texas origins. I think he's from New York, and he went to Harvard.
Yeah.
And not that you can't go to Harvard from Texas, but...
Yeah, and Texas isn't exactly, like, a hotbed of public media.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I just found it really interesting that this whole thing came out of Texas. And, like, not Austin. Like, sure, there's plenty of stuff going on in Austin, but it was, like, Plano, Texas, which is a different place entirely.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Like, I don't know. I really do like the fact that, again, this is, like, from that classic PBS system of just pitch a show, get the funding, get it on your affiliate, go nationwide, make a lot of people happy.
Yeah.
I liked that. I didn't know it was in Texas, but I could tell that they were all trying not to sound Southern. except every once in a while it would slip through, which, like, you don't hear on TV all that much, and I liked that. Especially, like, the basketball coach, and Joe would do it every once in a while.
Yeah, Joe would. The mom, sometimes.
Real mother and son.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. The mom is his real mom.
Oh, yeah, they have the same last name. That makes sense. I was going to say, they have, a pretty good dynamic. Not that they're, like, good actors, necessarily, but like, who cares? But I do like her as a mom. You know, she seems to just be that classic TV mom, I guess. Like, I do like their dynamic.
Yeah, she reminds me of Dawn Summers from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's fair.
Which I liked her, except for the calculator part I had a hard time with.
Well, okay, so this is a good time to start talking about the episodes that we watched. Season 1, Episode 5, Homer, Sweet Homer, which was an adaptation of The Odyssey. Season 1, Episode 23, Bark to the Future, an adaptation of The Time Machine. And Season 2, Episode 3, The Prince of Wags, which was about Henry the IV. So the episode with the calculator is Bark to the Future, that second one that I mentioned. Yeah. Do you guys want to go chronologically, or do you want to... How do you want to do that?
Your show.
We can go chronologically.
Okay. So, Homer, Sweet Homer, The Odyssey. This was one of the episodes that I remembered fairly vividly. Like, I remember him drawing the bow and, like, trying to shoot an arrow, which was really funny. And then I realized when I was looking through the episode list that I combined this one and Hercules and the Golden Apples into, like, a single one in my head. But, yeah, no. Yeah, so,
well,
say things.
I liked this one. Well, okay. So, The Odyssey is a book I had probably since read, obviously, since I saw it on Wishbone. And it's just, I mean, obviously, it's such a huge book that I was kind of curious, like, what parts of it they would do on Wishbone, and they kind of only did the end.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to get on them, because, like, how much time do you actually have? But that disappointed me, because I would have liked to see, like, Cyclops and more of, like, the mythical elements.
Yeah.
Because they do it in other episodes. Like, they, not that it's, like, high tech, but they show a lot of other cool stuff, and this is kind of just the return. Other than that, what I did like is the whole, they kind of talk about Homer a little bit, and just, like, the idea of, like, Greek epic storytelling, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually wound up spending a lot of time on the Odyssey in school, because I took Latin for several years, and instead of actually learning the language, we just studied, like, Greco-Roman history, culture, and myth, so...
That's cool.
So this was one that I had a better understanding of, I think, than others.
I have no understanding of the Odyssey. And this was the first one that I watched. Like, I watched them in the order that we just said them in, these episodes. Mm-hmm. And so, like, and it did feel like the end of a story when they started telling the story. And so, like, 6 minutes in, I was like, oh, this is over. And it wasn't. It was still just the beginning. But I think out of all three, I can't tell. This was my favorite one, and it was the one I, like, took the most notes on, but it also could have been because it was the first one that I watched. And, like, by the second one, I was like, okay. And then by the third one, I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But I liked I also liked that last part where they started, like, talking about the history. I think that was my favorite part, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that, like, that was cool, because that's, like, how long did they take on that? Like, 30 seconds? But it was definitely, like, informative, especially if you're a kid, you know? What do you guys think of, like, the side plot of this one, though? Or I shouldn't say the side plot, cause, you know, the normal plot.
I mean, it's basically the plot to I Heart Huckabees, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is.
That's funny. Yeah, they, right.
They have a neighborhood park that some, like, mall developer acquires and wants to cut down all the trees and build a mall on top of. So that's why I was thinking that.
He did my favorite thing that anyone did in any of these episodes, which is that when he walked into the park, he had a giant cell phone in his hand, and he was, like, talking and talking and talking, and then out of nowhere, he picked up the phone and put it to his head, and he said, "I'll get back to you later," and then he put it back down.
Oh my god.
Wishbone did that?
No,
the guy, the suit guy.
Yeah,
was going to tear the tree down.
Mr. King was his name, like, or, like, Donald Trump developer guy.
It was like they just were like, do something with the cell phone. He did a thing that, like, kind of made no sense.
So the actors on Wishbone are like filled out by local Dallas like play actors, like theater actors, and sometimes it's like not surprising, you know, not dissing the local Dallas theater scene, but.
No, but I think that's what all kids' stuff is. Like, we talked about that a bunch when we watched that we
Pinkle's Party.
Pinkle's Party was the same thing.
Yeah, we were like, how do you cast something like this? It's just like community theater people.
Actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. So, I mean, it's kind of cool that, like, the themes of, like, what... I don't know if that counts as deforestation, but kind of. I mean, I guess he was going to knock down the forest, so yeah. And just...
Yeah, I mean, green spaces, you know, important parts of our community getting destroyed so we can have more malls.
I like, what's this kid's name? God, sorry, I'm terrible with the names of this show, but that's okay. Joe's friend, his name is...
The friend who was at first, he was like, oh, I wanted a tasty oasis, and then like, I changed my mind.
He's like, oh, sweet, a tasty oasis.
Well, yeah, because they're at, like, a community board meeting or, a, like, town hall meeting or whatever at the end of the episode, and each one of them is, like, getting up, and they're supposed to give these speeches as to, like, why this should remain a green space and not a mall, and they are not good speeches. Except for the last one, his friend.
The girl.
Yeah, that one made me cry a little bit.
So I was thinking, you know, obviously Joe's the main character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Normally in TV writing or any kind of writing, wouldn't you have Joe do the last speech? But they just must have known that he kind of, like, would suck at his speech.
Yeah, I mean,
Joe,
he's kind
everything,
of...
though. Like, who cares about Joe?
And I feel like they already established that he's, like, kind of a doofus.
Yeah, he's, like, he, like, gets everything. Like, he gets to be the captain of the basketball team, and, like, he gets all smart about math, and he gets this cool dog. Like, and he's not that cool. I don't know. I was annoyed by Joe a little bit, and also annoyed by, like, the morality of the show. In some ways.
Did you want it to be darker? Did you want it like...
Well, look at the literature that they're choosing. It's so complex, and it's so... Some of it is really dark. Like, of course, they don't go there because it's a kid's show, but, like, mm-hmm. I think that's annoying to choose these, like, really complex stories and then to run it alongside a story where the ending is always happy. Like, come on.
But there's a cute dog.
Yeah,
so there could be a disappointing ending and a cute dog.
I don't know if that's true. It just took a second to think about that. I mean, on P.S. I Love Hoffman, I think in like 5 movies at least so far, there's been a dog character. The dog always survives. Not character, but you know, the dog always survives. And it's just like, yay, you know, and the dog comes on screen and everyone's happy. I don't know. On a PBS show, if they could have complicated this with the dog, you know? I mean, they could have. It would have been interesting. It would have been groundbreaking, but I guess...
It's like, what if they didn't always win? Maybe they don't always win. I only watched 3 episodes. Do they always win?
I don't know. I haven't seen... I mean, I probably have seen enough, but I don't remember. All the ones I saw today, they kind of won.
Yeah. Right? Like, Joe always wins in the end.
Well, actually,
family or the town or whatever.
His friend, that's a girl, her name is Sam.
Sam.
She's the one who seems to always win. Like, because she's, like, smarter and, like, just better at things and prettier than everyone else. And, like, just always seems to be, like, the character that, like, or at least among the children, like, manages to, like, have
her Hermione.
Shit together. Yeah, she
oh,
is the
good.
Hermione.
Yeah.
That's a good example. Yeah.
As a kid, I was really drawn to her the most. And I can't remember why, but I just remember being like, this girl's pretty cool.
Me too. And I remember having some very confusing feelings about her. Being like, she's really pretty.
Well, it's like, I think that's why I'm so mad at Joe. Is like, you look at all the people around Joe, and like, he doesn't deserve to be the protagonist, but he is because he's the white boy, you know?
True.
He's also, I don't, maybe it has to do with the fact that it's like a mother-son thing, like in terms of casting, that they're just, Maybe they really like the mom, and they're like, oh, my son has to be on. But again, I don't know how she could demand this kind of power in this, like, Texas PBS world, but I don't know. No, but you're right. He's like, Joe's a dope. Even when he gets older, he's even more of a dope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like he tries harder in season one. In season two, he just feels like he doesn't want to... Again, I saw one episode today from season two. But I feel like he just doesn't want to be there in season two.
Yeah, and, like, he just... between the season two episode that we all watched and the Sleepy Hollow episode, his focus is, like... entirely basketball. Like, that's all that he cares about.
Basketball.
And, like, everything else is just annoying. Which I guess is a good segue to talk about the second episode, Bark to the Future, which, like I said, is about the time machine, and then the B plot, the, like, real world plot line is that he's in math class and he has a hard time with math, which I feel you, Joe. And he gets this fancy new calculator, and he's like, oh, sweet, now I don't have to do math with my brain. And then, like, at the end of the episode, he learns that sometimes you also have to use your brain for math. And you can't just rely on the calculator, because you won't always have a calculator,
also,
which is not true.
This is not true. And you need your brain to do math with a calculator. Like, you need to know what numbers to type in to the calculator.
No, but if the calculator has fractions, it's okay. I like, a fraction button.
Here's where I thought the mom was a terrible mom. They were sitting in the kitchen, and Joe's friend was there, and his mom was there, and he gave his mom his test, and she was like, oh, C minus, and he was, like, so embarrassed. And, like, his friend was like, hey, all you need is this calculator. And the friend gives him a calculator, and the mom lets him, but then comes over and is like, Joe, we talked about calculator. It's like it was alcohol. Seriously? Like...
I know. And, you know, it's true.
But I thought that it was weird that if that kid wasn't allowed to have a calculator, why would she let the friend give it to him? She's the adult in the room. All she would have to say is, like, sorry, Joe can't have this calculator.
But he has to learn for himself, that's why. Because if she just keeps taking the calculator away and says, Joe, you can't have this calculator, you know, he's going to be like, oh, mom won't let me have a calculator. She's such a bitch. But, like, you know, if he learns that he's reliant on this calculator and then finds himself in a situation where he does not have access to the calculator, which... Not to be a spoiler, but Joe, don't worry, soon we'll all have cell phones.
Well, that's what I wrote. I wrote, like, wouldn't kids just, like, laugh out loud at that today? Like,
yeah.
To tell someone they can't have a piece of technology is unheard of.
Yeah, but it's bananas.
The lesson, though, with the time machine, like, now the episode would be easier to do. It wouldn't be about, like, math class necessarily, but, you know, they really have to because of PBS. It would be more about, like, oh, don't be so reliant on your phones kind of thing.
Right.
But back then...
More about trying to get someplace without GPS.
Yeah, that's a good one. I know we don't want to do, like, scene-by-scene analysis here, and I don't want to take up too much of you guys' time, but that, like, garage sale scene or that yard sale scene was so...
Mm-hmm.
That bothered me. Like, the one guy who's in a rush at a yard sale on a Saturday...
He's like a 12-year-old kid. They were so mean to him.
And for the woman, Wanda,
I like Wanda.
I like her, too, but why is she discounting things 55% off? Like, 37.5% off on, like, a hat? It's like, it doesn't... Like, Jesus Christ.
But she's the wacky character. It's actually totally consistent with her character.
Still makes me angry.
Well, that scene actually, like, really stressed me out because I've always had a really hard time... with Matt. Like, I see numbers and I just start sweating.
Wait, I can't blame him. I can't blame him for being overwhelmed.
I felt really, this was actually hard to watch. I felt really bad for him. It was really stressful to watch him try to do math.
Yeah, under, like, this time constraint of this guy. Who
yeah, like, people yelling at him and then the pizza guy was standing there, too.
Yeah, the pizza guy. I did like that actor. He seemed like
I
he
looked
was...
him up. I thought he might be somebody. He's not.
I think he might have actually been the pizza guy, like, for their neighborhood.
Well, interestingly, this is a kind of a connection with our last episode. He says something about, like, the pizza being under 30 minutes, you know, the delivery guarantee is like under 30 minutes or it's free, which was like a really big thing around that time. I don't know if you guys remember, but like all of the pizza places were doing that sort of gimmick that like, you know, delivery within this certain time window or the pizza's free, which we didn't, in our last episode, didn't actually watch the episode where this happens in Pete and Pete, but in one episode of Pete and Pete.
But let's be honest, we both watched it.
Yeah. Ellen works as a pizza delivery woman, where she has to wear this bunny costume and deliver things in under 30 minutes or it's free.
Oh, I do remember that.
That's the last episode.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh my god. Epic. Sorry, it just went to like a nostalgia head thing.
That's what this is for.
True. I guess that was like a 90s thing. 30 minutes or... I mean, I don't know. I haven't ordered a pizza in a while.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember seeing the commercials. I lived somewhere that like didn't have pizza delivery because everything was too far apart. But
gotcha.
I did like Wanda, though, because even with her weird discounts, she's the one who showed Joe that the decimal trick, when you're doing like 10% of something, you just move the decimal over. Like, his math teacher didn't show him.
Exactly.
That.
I actually made that note. I'm glad you brought it up. What the hell? Like, she's a better teacher than his math teacher.
Yeah, like, no wonder he can't do math.
I don't like his math teacher's attitude. Like, when he comes up to him, he's like, Joe, you got this. Like, I know it's, like, positive, but he doesn't know.
Yeah.
It also seems inappropriate for a teacher to do that in the middle of a test during a class.
Yeah, there's just a weird vibe with him. I mean, I applaud them for, like, isn't he, like, disabled and stuff?
Yeah, he's a wheelchair user, yeah. Which I was actually really surprised
he
by. You don't usually
Hispanic
see.
He is a Hispanic wheelchair user.
Yeah, this is, by the way, this town is very diverse.
Well, it is Texas. I mean,
I know for, Joe is the lead, but the mayor is black, as we see in the first episode we watched.
The whole basketball team is black.
Well,
except for all the cheerleaders are white.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, well, I feel like it was like that thing in the 90s where they were like, well, if we just put some black people here and make sure we have some girls and like a couple of Hispanic people and like one Asian, like we did it. They're like checking off boxes.
The diversity
and they were like,
rainbow.
Oh, yeah, wheelchair guy.
And Hispanic.
I don't know.
Two boxes there.
I can't like speak about it too intelligently because like I'm white and not disabled, so like I can't say what it would feel like to see that. Maybe it would be great for me to see that if I had never seen myself represented on TV before, but it just like felt like they were checking off boxes because the show was still about a white boy.
That's the thing. All these teams in the 90s that were assembled with diversity were led by a white guy, and. That is
wow, it's amazing how much has changed since then.
It's very different now.
Yeah.
True.
We've come so far.
Just speaking, though, from like a Hispanic kid growing up, myself, just to clarify, I would always like seeing, there was just always a little something like, oh, cool, this is a diverse town. That's awesome. But it is like, looking back now, yeah, there is like obvious efforts to make it that way. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, like, a stupid way to go about it. Especially when we go back to Joe being the dummy white kid, too.
Like. Yeah, because, like, when I experienced, like, watching that kind of stuff as a girl, like, it was obvious to me that the girls were always, like, smarter and cooler. But they never let them have their own thing, you know? Mm-hmm. It was the girl was always just, like, the friend or the peripheral character or something.
Yeah, and in these shows, like, the girl who's the friend never has other friends who are girls.
No.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's like...
Well, that's because she's a cool girl.
Yeah, it's, the cool girls hang out with the boys.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, it's true. But regardless, I mean, is there anything else you want to touch on this episode? I thought the... Oh, yeah. I did want to talk about, like, the H.G. Wells part of it a little bit.
Okay.
I've never read that book. I'm not sure if that's accurate to the book, but it is a little like there are certain like timeless stories, no pun intended there, and I feel like that's definitely something that could be applicable today. But like as I mentioned, it would not they would not tie it into a calculator story, in it for the B story, as he put it.
Yeah. I don't know. I never read it either, and I like time travel stuff, but for some reason, the time machine has never like been of interest to me.
Who knows? I mean, again, I just applaud them for tackling H.G. Wells.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was Bark to the Future. And then the third episode, Prince of Wags, Henry the Fourth, which I definitely did not read and have, like, no context for.
No, that's also kind of the reason, like, I picked this one. I didn't even remember this episode. And it just, it felt so heavy, and I wanted to see how they tackled it.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah, this was the least good one out of the three.
Well, we discussed, like, the whole season two aspect of, like older Joe, and I think they're, I didn't see too many of the other season two episodes, but they kind of also downplay the other characters. Sam and the other
guys. There's a lot of basketball jargon in this one.
Yeah,
it's
well,
like they needed to waste time.
The B plot in this one is about Joe getting like elected as captain of his basketball team and learning about being a leader or something and having stinky socks. Was that this episode or a different episode that I watched? The stinky socks.
I don't think that was this one.
Okay, that was the Sleepy Hollow episode. So okay. Never mind.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. It goes back to, like, I'm not sure why they elected Joe captain.
Yeah, he doesn't seem, like, much of a leader.
No, this is where I was the most mad at him.
He's super not confident, you know? Like, usually, in those kind of settings, you kind of elect the confident kid. That's just naturally what happens. I don't know, leadership, maybe it's related, I'm not sure. But he's just like, me? I mean, I'm the captain? I hope to do.
Are you sure, guys? Yeah, and then like the dick kid, Demont, who was in most of the episodes that I watched. I think he, just being that like archetypal bully, endless Mike Hellstrom character. He's mad because he didn't get to be captain of the basketball team.
So he's a featured person in the other season two episodes, or like.
He was in the one that I watched.
Wow.
It was like this whole Halloween episode, and they're like out and about on Halloween night, and he's being, you know, a terror.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling season two as much.
Yeah, I had the hardest time with like the fantasy story too. I thought that it had like the most amount of like bad wigs and overacting that made it like a little bit laughable.
The whole they actually won the Emmy for like costume design, and I guarantee it was not for this season. You would think they would have like upped the budget for them, but no. What's like, I guess his dad, Wishbone's, the character's father, is a terrible like costume. He might be wearing a fake mustache, I can't remember. It just he looked terrible. And it's also like a complex story with a battle.
Yeah.
Really? I must have not been paying attention at that point.
It was hard to pay attention to this one.
No, I definitely agree. I think sometimes they bit off, no, that's a terrible pun, but they bit off like two like what's the phrase?
More than they could chew.
Yes, more than they could chew. Because this isn't like, if I was going to name right now the top 10 Shakespeare plays I know, and I'm not like a Shakespeare enthusiast, this is not in there.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
And it wasn't like they were like running out of material. It was only the second season.
They have the entire Western canon of classic literature to choose from.
Maybe like it was easier to get the rights to this one. Like,
I mean, that's possible, I guess.
I don't think you have to get the rights to Shakespeare anymore.
Yeah, it's in the public domain.
I'm just trying to think of reasons.
Because it's Henry the Fourth, Part 1.
Right, and isn't Henry VIII, like, the famous one?
I think so, yeah. So I really don't...
Because I, like, had to double-check my Roman numerals. I was like, am I reading this right? Because I thought it was Henry VIII. I didn't even know that Shakespeare wrote a Henry IV part one.
So. It's amazing that there's two parts. Now to be right. clear, it's the play is Henry IV part one. There's no part two of this episode. It's just...
Right.
A part... again, maybe the Texas theater troupe... demanded that they could pick one thing that they could do on screen to show, like, their chops, and this is, like, the play they picked.
All right, we'll do the show, but we have to pick this, we have to produce this really obscure Shakespeare play. I don't know how obscure it is, but it's obscure to me, so.
It's obscure enough that mainstream people don't know it, and that's fine. There's a lot of books that, like, definitely kids don't know it. Mm-hmm. But at least pick something that kids might probably have to read in high school.
Well, I scrolled through all the episodes because I wanted to just have an idea of, like, what else they did. And they did like, Romeo and Juliet and maybe another one. But, you know, like, things that, like, kids would at least have maybe heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I mean, Macbeth, right, Hamlet, Midsummer Night's Dream. Not, like, a history epic.
Yeah, it's so boring.
There's no, like, that's where the dog does not help. Like, it really doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, there's really not much to talk about this episode either. Sorry for picking that one.
It's okay. What were the other episodes that you watched?
So I watched one with, like, I forgot what it was called, but it was, like, a Pride and Prejudice one.
Okay.
And it was pretty good because it was just, like, funny. And it was one of those, again, where, like, Wishbone's supposed to be a hot man.
Wait, does he play Mr. Darcy?
Yeah, he's Darcy.
Okay.
So
interesting.
That one was cool. What else? I had a bunch on in the background that I wasn't really, like, I was doing other stuff, but I would just, like, peep in from time to time. So the Ivanhoe one, like, I think I mentioned earlier, was actually pretty good. There's some, like, kind of weird biblical ones.
Okay.
I don't know if it's, like, a Texas thing, but it seemed kind of weird, like, public television doing, like, Bible stories, but, like, there's a David and Goliath, but that's, I guess, just, like, a traditional story, right? I'm gonna try to look it up quickly. But then they go into, like, other religions, stories from other religions, which I guess if you're just being fair, I don't know. But 50 episodes. Season 1 is a lot bigger than season 2 for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's not like they run out of material, so I don't really understand where they were going. But again, I'm not shitting on this show, though. I'm happy they did it. I enjoyed it as a kid, at least peripherally. It helped me pretend that I read books, which is kind of it's kind of ironic because, like, it's kind of what the calculator episode's about. Like, Brian, don't depend on Wishbone for your reading.
This is a really good segue into something that I wanna bring up. And it's that, like we grew up on all of this TV that was, like, it was framed as, like, being educational and, like, making us smarter and, like, teaching us shit. And, like, it didn't. Like, like, this, you know, this was all filled with, like, moral lessons of, like, don't chop down the trees and, like, take care of each other and be a leader and, like, whatever. And, like, I don't think any of that actually made us different than we would have been anyway.
I mean,
it's not like this made the world a better place.
Well, no, but I don't think the people who are in charge of, like, who make the big deforestation decisions are of the age to would have watched this show.
Well, that was one of the questions I wrote down, was that, like, are enough of us not in charge yet? Or did it not work?
It's a good question.
I don't know. I feel like the deforestation episode was part of, like, a larger zeitgeist of caring about forests, though. Because, like, remember in the 90s when everyone, like, cared about the rainforest?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah, that was a huge deal. And now, like, I mean, I think environmental issues are more mainstream, but, like, as far as actual, like, issues of the forest and, like, forest cover on the earth, it's, like, one of the lesser concerns.
Isn't it weird how, like, certain concerns get trendy? Like, not to go off on a tangent, but no, you're absolutely right. You bring that up, and I think of a movie like Fern Gully. I don't know if you guys have
seen Fern Gully is so good. And I just wanted to take a moment to say that if anyone out there is listening and wants to do an episode of Wistful Thinking about Fern Gully, I am so here for it. Please send us an email.
Definitely
What's
tune into that
What's our email address?
Wistfulpod@gmail.com.
Wistfulpod@gmail.com. Fern Gully. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you saying?
No, I was just bringing up Fern Gully, I guess. How it's just part of this deforestation movement, or like love the rainforest movement, like you were discussing. And I don't know. Hopefully it made us better people, but who knows? Like, the bulk of the oldest of someone who watched this show seriously is probably like, I don't know, still early 30s, right?
Yeah, probably our age.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I don't know if, like, that's really taken effect. But then again, this isn't the first show to educate people.
No.
Does anyone know, like, if they're still doing TV like this today? Obviously, probably not that quality, but I'm just so detached from children's PBS shows that I really don't know what's on anymore. It seems a lot more animated, though.
I don't know that much about it. I know I have a friend with a 3-year-old, and he loves Daniel Tiger. Who's basically like it's kind of Mr. Rogers-y, except it's all animated.
Oh yeah. I heard about that. I didn't know that was still on. That's cool.
So like I know that. So yeah, I mean I think they still do this same kind of like message TV.
So maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. So what should we do then?
I don't know. We should. Just look at each other in the face and, like, talk to each other and, like, stop watching TV, I guess. I don't know.
No.
We're not going to do that. Like,
I think cute dogs could be better utilized.
I think, like, the other thing that I was annoyed by in this was, like... Like, every episode has the general message of, like, if you do the right thing, good things will happen and everything will work out. And, like, I feel like everything we watched had that message, and it's just, like, so not true.
Oh, yeah. How depressing is that?
So not true. Like, I feel so ruined by that shit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at your ruination,
but... No, it's funny. They ruined that. Like, they told us it was going to be easy... And if we were good, things would be good. And it's not true.
Well, that's why I find this, like, age that we keep coming back to so compelling, like I said. Because, like, at some point, you realize that all of that is a lie, you know?
Indeed it is. I mean, I think that's why it's so hard, again, to watch Joe now. Because Joe is a dope, like a pushover dope. And... he succeeds and he does well and his friends love him anyway and he gets elected captain and that's just not how the real world works.
But it does work that way if you're a white dude.
I don't know I feel like the other guy's definitely going to be elected captain of that basketball team, for example.
What guy?
The bully.
DeMont?
Yeah, DeMont.
You think that he's the real captain?
I don't think he should be the captain. I think he'd be elected in real life.
I don't know about that, because he's a real dick. Like, and
But the dick and, always gets elected captain. Joe's merits?
Always.
Let's debate the merits of Joe's captaincy right now.
Listen, I agree with you that Joe has no business being the captain of that basketball team. But I don't think, you know, like, the dick doesn't always win. I mean, clearly the outcome of our last presidential election is not... a great indicator of that.
Maybe that's why I'm so jaded, but...
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to be.
Feels like it happens a lot.
Sometimes the dick might
be a
better captain, too.
Well, yeah, I think that a lot of the personality traits that lead to somebody being a dick are also what we think of as leadership qualities.
Right. Oh, boy.
But it can go in kind of two different directions. You know, are you a tyrant or are you somebody who leads by example and like pulls people up, like the people below you, you know, extending a hand to them. It can go kind of different ways, management style wise.
We started off talking about like a cute little dog reading books, and now I'm depressed, and I don't know how we got here.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking.
That's what we do.
Thanks, guys.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or that can pull us up from this hole that we've dug ourselves into?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Soccer the dog who played Wishbone.
Oh my god, yes. I didn't get a chance to read about him. Does his ear actually have a paw print on it?
It actually did. That's how he... No. but
I'm
he
so
was...
disappointed.
They did do a whole casting search for this dog, which seems a little odd because it was like a small Texas production, but they went out to L.A. and saw like 1,000 dogs or something like that. They just wanted a small dog, but they really didn't care about breed. Uh-huh. And as someone who works with dogs, Jack Russell's, who I love because I love spunky dogs, maybe because of Wishman, I don't know. But Jack Russell's have like big personalities, and they're notoriously kind of harder to train, but they're very smart. It's kind of surprising that a Jack Russell won this out, but he had been in like some commercials before Soccer, mm-hmm. the dog. And the only thing with him is he wasn't good at stunts. So he had a couple stunt
body
doubles.
Body double?
He had four stunt doubles.
What does it mean that a dog is not good at stunts?
So as the creator explained it, he was really good for like walking in the room, looking cute, barking, approaching people, but in terms of like jumping around, I guess, I don't know, like the stunts he does, especially in like the action scenes, they had like particular dogs that had particular sets of skills. And just I want to acknowledge them. Their names were Phoebe, Bear, Slugger, and Shiner. So
all of which are much better dog names than Soccer.
Soccer is a pretty dumb dog name, but Soccer was named after his favorite toy, a soccer ball. Yes, that was my deep dive of Wishbone / Soccer facts. Not the sport, obviously, the dog. And I guess that's it. There's not a lot to find on this show.
Nah.
Which
is kind of a shame.
Yeah, it is. It's certainly not... a timeless show. Like, I can't imagine if I ever have children that they'll ever encounter this show unless I...
But, like, would you show it to them?
Would I show it to... Yeah, I mean, I guess. I just don't think that they'd be very interested in it. I don't think the kids today would be very interested in it.
They'd be like, well, who needs a calculator? Why doesn't he just use his phone?
Well, they might be interested for, like, nostalgia factor. Like, what's that? But
I don't think kids care that much.
Okay.
They'd be like, this is dumb. Can we watch Daniel Tiger or like whatever the equivalent is?
I
don't know. I was a little disappointed. I remembered this a lot more fondly than it turned out to be.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. I was disappointed, but again, I'm happy it exists. It won awards. It helped me read or pretend I read. It
launched Mo Rocca's career.
Yeah, it launched Mo Rocca's career. It did some very good things. It has a cute dog. I'll still, again, I if this show did not have the dog, and I know that's like an impossible proposition, but if this show did not have the dog, it would be crap.
It would be garbage.
What if this show was all dogs?
Now we're talking. Mm. Now that's a show that I would watch.
I kept thinking that because in the beginning when I like couldn't get over that they were like treating the dog like a man, and the dog had a son, I was like, well, what if this is all dogs? And then I think that I would like it a lot better, but I think it probably would have been impossible to make if it was all dogs.
Yeah.
There would never have gone 50 episodes in.
Right.
I guess
I think it would have been a better show.
Probably.
Yeah, I agree. They could have animated it. And that would
all
be
all live
like...
action dogs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not the same as you're animating it. The cool thing is about seeing a live-action dog just be cute, you know? Imagine, like, a whole battle scene of... Well, no, that
tiny dogs.
Yeah,
big dogs. Medium-sized dogs.
It'd be super cool.
It would.
Yeah,
but I would watch.
I mean, part of seeing, like, the fun of this is, like, just... Live-action dog movies are cool, and I'm using air quotes that you can't see... Because of seeing all the different types of dogs interact with each other and have sassy personalities.
Yeah.
It doesn't translate.
I mean, we're
animated.
We're basically talking about the Puppy Bowl.
Essentially. I mean, look how popular that is, and for good reason.
But in the Puppy Bowl, they don't give the dogs voices, right? It's just like a bunch of puppies running around, and they do commentary on it.
They have commentary.
The dogs are not speaking.
I mean, that'd be pretty hard to do.
It'd be so funny. I would definitely watch that.
Yeah, they should. They should just get like a bunch of good voice actors. Like,
yeah,
that's your puppy right there, dude.
Yeah,
you got to speak for
him. Improvisers.
Yeah, and you just, you know, you have a good director, like a good audio guy, just like cutting back and forth. I don't know. I think we landed on something here.
I think we did. Does anybody have a phone number for somebody at Animal Planet?
Or
an email address? We got a pitch to do.
That'd be cool, but
yeah. So anyway, I guess this is the end of the podcast. And thanks for listening to Wistful Thinking. You can find us and more movie and nostalgia podcasts from the Cage Club Podcast Network at cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. I'm Kara Gail O'Regan with Jordan Poland Clark. Do you want to say anything?
Oh,
bye. Bye.
I'm done.
And Brian Rodriguez.
Forget me.
And this
I'm just
was
too
us.
Depressed.
Oh. What a terrible note to end on.
No, don't end there.
Okay, well, what am I supposed to do?
We'll say something happier then.
I'm trying to land the plane.
Not a plane, it's a bus.
It's a bus. I'm trying to park the bus.
Park the bus, land the plane, do whatever. But definitely listen to P.S. I Love Hoffman as well.
Yeah.
That's on cageclub.me.
Yeah, I was
on. .me.
Yes. I was on their Patch Adams episode.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about Patch Adams. They recently came out with their Almost Famous episode, which was excellent and made me realize that I can recite the entire movie. And so that was a fun travel back in time. So definitely check out P.S. I Love Hoffman and all of the other fun Cage Club Network shows. This was Wistful Thinking. This was us talking about Wishbone. And we'll talk to you next time. Okay, bye.